This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Consumers return to brick-and-mortar stores for their Black Friday shopping, but will inflation rain on retailers' profits? Plus, China pours billions into its struggling property sector, and we'll get the latest outlook for the global economy.
Usually, going into a new year, there's one big economy where things are really unknowable or uncertain. This thing is like everywhere at the same time.
It's Friday, November 25th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Millions of Americans are expected to visit brick-and-mortar retail stores today in a return to pre-pandemic shopping habits following 2 years of increased online shopping. According to MasterCard Spending Pulse, Black Friday sales at physical stores are expected to rise by 18% compared to last year, while online sales are expected to be up 3.7%. We'll have more on the holiday retail outlook for toy manufacturers and take a look at how consumer shopping patterns are being affected by inflation later in the show. Twitter boss Elon Musk says he will reinstate suspended accounts on the social media platform beginning next week, bringing back users that had previously been banned for posting hate speech, inciting violence, or engaging in other behavior that violated Twitter policies. According to Musk, that amnesty won't apply to accounts that have, quote, broken the law or engaged in egregious spam. Musk has described himself as a free speech absolutist and said that Twitter generally should intervene only to comply with local laws. The U.S. is poised to grant a license to U.S. oil company Chevron to pump oil in Venezuela. That policy shift would signal the easing of years-long sanctions against Venezuela and could open the door for other oil companies to do business there. Granting the license to Chevron is contingent on the Venezuelan government and its political opposition announcing a $3 billion humanitarian aid and infrastructure program to be backed by state funds frozen in overseas banks, as well as an agreement to resume political talks. That is, according to people familiar with the matter, who said those announcements are expected on Saturday. State-owned banks in China are planning to offer as much as $178 billion in financing to support the country's property developers, in what amounts to the biggest injection of funding into the sector in years. Wall Street Journal China Markets reporter Rebecca Fung has more on these latest efforts to restore confidence in the beleaguered property sector, which include credit lines, bond investments, and guarantee letters to selected property companies.
In the short term, these financing support or liquidity support make sure that those developers who have not defaulted so far will unlikely default in the months to come. So it definitely helps with their short-term liquidity pressure. However, in the long run, what will sort of truly turn the sector around is more demand. So we need to see increasing home sales, which we're not seeing now. And economists and analysts are saying the crucial factor for a recovery in home sales would be improving the Chinese economy. So ideally, the lifting of the strict zero COVID policies and seeing more kind of sustained reopening.
And European Union energy ministers meeting yesterday have failed to reach an agreement on a proposed natural gas price cap, saying that they would resume debate next month. EU diplomats are also struggling to agree on a separate plan to cap prices for Russian oil around the world. This year, the toy industry is counting on a Christmas miracle. As the holiday shopping season kicks into high gear today, manufacturers and retailers are contending with a glut of inventory and hoping that consumers who have thus far pulled back on their purchases this year come through in the coming weeks if they hope to hit their sales targets. Wall Street Journal reporter Catherine Hardison has been following this story for us, and she joins us now with the latest. Catherine, hi. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So this time a year ago, the story was that supply chain issues were leaving some stores with far too little of what shoppers wanted. It sounds like we're now in a different situation. What's changed exactly?
Yeah, so both retailers and toy makers decided to order product much earlier this year because they didn't want to repeat those issues that we faced last year. So that means many companies have been holding on to inventory while still trying to work through leftover toys that arrived late last holiday.
And on the consumer end of things, Catherine, we've seen a big shift in shopping patterns too.
Yeah, so stores are overflowing with toys and retailers are already slashing prices. And shoppers have really pulled back on purchases because they are juggling with higher costs of gas and other essential items. And they're also holding out for better deals closer to the end of the holiday season. And toy makers say that this last minute shopping is a return to normal after the pandemic changed shopping patterns. So we talked to both small and large toy companies, and they all agree that parents will prioritize spending money on their kids for the holidays, regardless of what's happening in the economy. So there will be toys under the tree. It's just a matter of what deals and discounting is going to be put in place to win over those shopper sales.
So Catherine, the question then is, if shoppers don't come through in the next few weeks, where would that leave retailers and manufacturers?
Yeah, so if there's too many toys left on the shelves at the end of the year, that means retailers and companies will likely need to discount early next year to kind of move that product forward because they do want to keep the toys on the shelves new and relevant to what consumers are looking for. But companies may also need to push back future orders. To give you an idea of what's at stake here, the toy industry is a $39 billion industry, and they really log about half their sales in the last few weeks of the year. So it's really important time for toy companies and for retailers.
And that was Wall Street Journal reporter Catherine Hardison. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll shift from the outlook for the U.S. retail sector to the outlook for the global economy. That's after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The global economy is slowing as a turbulent 2022 draws to a close. But economists now think the deterioration in activity may not be as severe as was feared just a few months ago. Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Hannon has been pulling together economic indicators from around the globe and speaking to economists about their latest forecasts, and he joins us now with the latest. Paul, thank you for being with us.
Good to talk to you again, Luke.
Break this down for us. Less severe projections of deterioration in activity, maybe, but a number of countries would still be having a tough few months ahead. How do we square all of this?
Well, the outlook is still pretty gloomy. We haven't suddenly sort of emerged from all of the difficulties that have been confronting the various parts of the global economy. What we're seeing is that the worst fears, which I think were growing in sort of late summer, particularly around Europe and its ability to get through the winter without energy rationing, those worst fears now seem unlikely to materialize. But that is not the same thing as saying that we're in the clear and the global economy is suddenly looking in good shape. It most certainly is not. And there are many things that could still go wrong, including in Europe with energy supply and, for example, also in China with COVID-19.
And Paul, what factors have contributed to this forecast now looking maybe less severe than it did previously?
Okay, well, in Europe, energy storage levels have been much higher, I think, than most economists had expected. As it turns out, LNG, liquefied natural gas, was much more readily available in global markets at a more modest price, still a high price, but not as stratospheric as people feared. So there was availability, and then we hit October, which is typically the first month of the winter heating season. And all across Europe, the weather was a good deal milder than is usual. So you have that combination of freer availability and less immediate need. And so what that gives people confidence with is that we will be able to get through the winter, unless there is a spectacularly severe January, February, which, you know, is still possible.
And where does China fit into all of this?
We can't forget that China is still very much living with the pandemic. China is in some ways sort of still in that story that we were all in together in 2020, particularly in that it's trying to confront serial outbreaks of the virus in a population that is not well vaccinated. In China, the expectation had been that the government would move away from its zero COVID policy and that would allow the economy to really pick up next year. But the tentative steps in that direction so far have been greeted with a big pickup in infections. So that seems less certain than it did a few weeks ago. And that's how quickly things are moving in the global economy. It looks good one week, and then it looks pretty gloomy the next.
What is the latest data out of the United States? How does that figure into the global outlook?
You know, I have to say that that is mixed as well. You get some indicators that show resilience in the consumer. Consumer spending still seems to be holding up. And that sort of suggests that maybe, you know, the coming recession, if it is on the way, would be relatively mild, or that the Fed would have to push rates much higher to contain inflation. But business surveys out this week showed that the US economy likely contracted in November. Manufacturers and service providers reported that output was below where it was last month. So the signals, I think, are pretty mixed. And I think, in a way, the US is one of the more uncertain parts of the global economy. Europe seems pretty certain that it's going into recession. China, the idea is still that it will rebound in 2023. But with the US, it's not certain how things are going to pan out in the first half of next year.
And finally, Paul, how accurate would you say these sort of forecasts are? How seriously, how much stock should we be putting into these projections?
I would not rely entirely upon them. Forecasts are mostly useful to help you think about what's happening and how it compares with what was expected. They're not really usually very good predictions of what actually turns out to be, you know, reality. And that's particularly true of this situation and in the last few years, because we've had these really unexpected, earth-shattering kind of developments, from one in a century pandemic to the first sort of serious major land war in Europe since the Second World War. Usually going into a new year, there's one big economy where things are really unknowable or uncertain, right? And then maybe a few other smaller spots where there's a key election or a civil war is broken out, whatever, you know? This thing is like everywhere at the same time. So I just don't think relying on a 2.2 this way or a 1.1 that way is smart.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Hannon. Paul, thanks as always for the time.
Good to talk, Luke.
And finally, if you find that inflation is driving up the bill for your Black Friday shopping today, a cafeteria rivalry between two major U.S. retailers, Sam's Club and Costco, has actually led to a price cut on a notable combo deal for a hot dog and a soda. And that is despite the fact that the price of Frankfurters increased 15% in October compared to the same period last year, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Wall Street Journal reporter Joseph De Avila has more.
Sam's Club recently cut the price of their hot dog combo, and it went from $1.50 to $1.38. And this is the first time in more than 20 years that they've changed the price of their hot dog combo. And it heats up their little rivalry that they have with Costco, because Costco is also famous for offering a $1.50 hot dog combo. And they have offered it since the 80s, and it's part of their brand identity. And so with Sam's Club undercutting Costco, they're dropping the price at a time when prices for a lot of products are still higher than typical. And this is one way that they're trying to get customers in the door.
We should note that Costco hasn't indicated whether it plans to follow suit. And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM-agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.